This is cassette number 17.
Nicky knew there could be no worse plight for Richard. The torture down in the depths of the stronghold was not as bad as what she had just condemned him to. Nicky was sure that this was the one thing, at last, that would force out the answer she sought, if there really was an answer to be found. Chapter 57. Brother Narev paused behind Richard's shoulder, a shadow come to visit. He often lurked nearby, making sure the carvings were progressing as directed. This was the first time the great man himself had stopped to watch Richard work.
"Don't I know you?"
The voice was like stone grating on stone. Richard let his arm holding the hammer drop to his side as he looked up. He wiped the dusty sweat from his brow with the back of his left hand, still holding the clawed stone chisel.
"Yes, Brother Narev. I was a laborer hauling iron at the time. I was bringing a load to the blacksmith one day when I was honored to meet you."
Brother Narev frowned suspiciously. Richard allowed no crack in his facade of innocent calm.
"A laborer? And now a carver?"
"I have ability which I am joyful to contribute to my fellow man. I am grateful for the opportunity the order has given me to earn my reward in the next life by sacrificing in this."
"Joyful?"
Neil, the shadow of the shadow, stepped forward.
"You are joyful to carve, are you?"
"Yes, Brother Neil."
Richard was joyful that Kalin was alive. He didn't think about the rest of it. He was a prisoner, and what he had to do to keep Kalin alive, he would do. That was all there was to it.
What was, was.
Brother Neil smirked his superiority at Richard's obeisance. The man had come often to lecture the carvers, and Richard had come to know him all too well. The carver's work, being the influential face the palace would show to the people, was critically important to the Fellowship of Order. Richard was frequently the object of Neil's harangues. Neil, a wizard, not a sorcerer like Brother Narev, always seemed to feel the need to prove his moral authority around Richard. Richard gave him no rough edge to grip, yet Neil still persisted in clawing for one. Brother Narev believed his own words with grim conviction. Mankind was evil. Only through selfless sacrifice to your fellow man had you any hope to redeem yourself in the afterlife. There was no joy in his faith, simply a ruthless duty to it. Neil, on the other hand, bubbled over with his feelings. He believed in the Order's doctrine with an impassioned, incandescent, arrogant pride, gleefully convinced the world needed iron-fisted direction which only enlightened intellectuals such as himself could provide, with grudging deference to Brother Narev, of course. Richard had more than once overheard Neil proclaim with conviction that if he had to order the tongues cut out of a million innocent men, it would be better than to allow one man to blaspheme against the self-evident, righteous nature of the Order's ways. Brother Neil, a fresh-faced young man, no doubt deceptively young, considering that Nicky said he had once lived at the Palace of the Prophets, frequently accompanied Brother Narev, basking in his mentor's approval. Neil was Brother Narev's chief lieutenant. His face might have been fresh, but his ideas were not. Tyranny was ancient. Even if Neil deluded himself in believing it the bright new salvation of mankind when applied by him and his fellows, his ideas were a paramour he embraced with a lover's boundless blind passion, a truth discovered with a lover's lust. Nothing stirred him to anger quicker than the whiff of argument or contradiction, no matter how reasoned. In the heat of his passion, Neil was perfectly willing to destroy any dissension, torture any opposition, kill any number who failed to bow before the pedestal upon which stood his irrefutably noble ideals. No misery, no failure, no amount of wailing and anguish and death could dim his glowing conviction that the ways of the Order were the only correct course for mankind. The other disciples, all, like Neil, wearing hooded brown robes, were an incongruous collection of the cruel, the pompously idealistic, the bitterly greedy, the resentful, the spiteful, the timid, and most of all, the dangerously deluded.
all shared an underlying caustic inner loathing for mankind, which manifested itself in a conviction that anything pleasurable for the people could only be evil, and accordingly only sacrifice could be good. All, with the exception of Neil, were blind followers, and completely under the spell of Brother Narev. They believed Brother Narev far closer to the Creator than to man. They hung on his every word, believing each to be divinely inspired. Were he to tell them they must kill themselves for the cause, Richard was sure they would break their necks rushing for the nearest knife. Neil was alone in that he believed in the divinity of his own words, in addition to Brother Narev's. Every leader had to have a successor. Richard was pretty sure Neil had already decided who would best serve as the next incarnation of the Order.
A peculiar choice of words. Joyful.
Brother Narev circled a knobby finger toward the cowering, deformed, frightened figures Richard was working on.
This makes you joyful?
Richard gestured to the light he had carved so as to shine down on the wretched men.
This, Brother Narev, is what makes me joyful, being able to show men cowering before the perfection of the Creator's light. It makes me joyful to show mankind's wickedness for all to see, for in this way they will know their duty to the Order above all else.
Brother Narev made a suspicious sound deep in his throat. The sunlight hooded his dark eyes more than usual and seemed to deepen the creases around his mouth as he regarded Richard with a look sharing mistrust and loathing, laced with apprehension. Only the apprehension was any different than the look he gave everyone. Richard fed him a vacant stare. The brother's mouth finally twisted with the dismissal of his private thoughts.
I approve. I forgot your name. But then, names are not important. Men are not important. Individually, each man is but a meaningless cog in the great wheel of mankind. How that wheel turns is all that matters, not the cogs.
Richard Cipher. One brow flocked in tangled white and black hair lifted.
Yes, Richard Cipher. Well, I approve of your carving, Richard Cipher. You seem to understand better than most how man is properly depicted.
Richard bowed. It is not my hand, but the Creator guiding it to help the Order show the way. The suspicious look was back, but Richard's expression made Brother Narev finally believe the words. Brother Narev, his hands clasped behind his back, glided away to see to other matters. Neil, like a child sticking close to his mother's skirts, scurried to stay close to Brother Narev's robes. He cast a scowl back over his shoulder. Richard almost expected to see Neil stick out his tongue. As best as Richard could figure, there were about 50 of the brown-robed disciples. He saw them often enough to come to know their nature. Victor had mentioned to Richard that one of the foundries had cast in pure gold from the master that the blacksmith had made, somewhere near the same numbers of the spell forms. Victor thought them only decorations. Richard had seen several of the gold spell forms being installed onto the tops of huge ornate stone pillars set out around the grounds of the retreat. The pillars in polished marble were designed and placed to look like grand decorations for a grand place. Richard suspected they were more. Richard went back to chiseling a thick, unbending limb. At least now his own limbs worked again. It had been a while, but he was healed. This, though, seemed no less a torture. People gathered every day to view the low relief carvings already up on the walls. Some people knelt on the cobblestone walks before the scenes, praying till their knees bled. Some brought rags to put beneath their knees as they prayed. Many simply stared with forsaken looks at the nature of mankind depicted in stone. Richard could see in the faces of many who came that they had come with some kind of vague, undefinable hope, hungering for some essential answer to a question they could not formulate. The emptiness in their eyes as they left was heartbreaking. They were people being drained of life no less than those bled to death in the dungeons of the Order. Some of those people gathered to watch the carvers work. In the 2 months Richard had worked at carving for the retreat, the crowds grew larger to watch him than any of the other men. The people sometimes wept at what they saw emerge from beneath Richard's chisels. In the 2 months Richard had worked at carving for the retreat, He had come to understand the nuance of carving in stone. What he carved was dispiriting, but the act of carving itself helped to make up for it. Richard reveled in the technical aspects of applying steel to stone, guided by intent. As much as he hated the things he had to carve, he came to love working stone with a chisel. The marble seemed almost alive under his touch. He would often carve some tiny part with reverence for the subject, a finger gracefully lifted, an eye with knowing vision, a chest holding a heart of reason. After he accomplished such grace, he would deface it to suit the order. More often than not, that was when people wept. Richard invented impossibly stiff, stilted, contorted people, bent under the weight of guilt and shame. If this was the way to preserve Kalin's life, then he would make everyone who saw the carvings weep their hearts out. In a way, they were doing the weeping for him, suffering over the carvings for him, being destroyed by what they saw for him. In this way, he was able to endure the torture. When the shadows lengthened to dusk and the day was finished, the carvers started putting away their tools into simple wooden boxes before going home for the night. They would all return not long after first light. The master builder provided them with orders for areas and shapes to be covered with carving, so they could shape the stones to the correct size. Brother Narev's disciples came by to provide the details of the stories to be told in stone. The stone Richard carved was for the grand entrance to the retreat. Marble steps swept around in a half-circle, leading up to the huge round plaza. A colonnade of pillars in a half-circle, mirroring the steps, surrounded the back half of the plaza. Richard's job was carving the sweep of scenes that were placed above those columns. It was to be an entrance which set the tone for the entire palace. In the center of the plaza, Brother Neil had told Richard that Brother Narev's vision was that there would be a statue dominating the entrance to the palace, and it was to be a work which would strike down any observer with an overpowering sense of their own guilt and shame at mankind's evil nature. The statue, in its horror, was a call to selfless sacrifice and was to be built into the form of a sundial, showing people cowering under the light of their creator. Neil had described it with such delight that the image it created in Richard's mind sickened him. Richard was the last to leave the site. As he often did, he headed up the hill along the winding road to the workshops. Victor was in his shop, banking his coals for the night. With autumn upon them, the days weren't insufferably hot, so the forge wasn't the miserable place it had been in high summer. Winter this far south in the old world was never harsh, but the forge in winter would be a good place to banish the chill that would come on cold, rainy days.
"Richard, so good to see you."
The blacksmith knew why Richard was there.
"Go on back. Maybe I will come sit with you when I'm finished here."
Richard gave his friend a smile and said, "I'd like that." Richard opened the double doors at the rear, letting the last of the light fill the room where stood the marble. He came often to see the monolith. Sometimes, after a day of carving ugliness, he had to come and look at the stone and imagine the beauty inside. That balance sometimes seemed as if it was all that sustained him. Richard's fingers, dusty from his work carving stone, reached out to feel the white cavatura marble. It was slightly different from the stone he carved down at the site. He had the experience now to discern the subtle difference. The grain was finer in Victor's stone, harder. It would better take and hold detail. Under Richard's fingers, the stone was as cool as moonlight and just as chaste. When he looked up, Victor was standing nearby, smiling wistfully, watching Richard and the stone.
"After carving such ugliness, it is good to look upon the beauty of my statue."
Richard chuckled in answer. Victor strode across the room, gesturing,
"Come, sit with me and have some lardo."
In the failing light, they sat on the threshold, eating thin slices of the heavy delicacy, savoring the cool air coming up the hill.
"You know, you don't need to come here to look at my beautiful statue," Victor said. "You have a beautiful wife to look at."
Richard didn't say anything.
"I never recalled you mentioning your wife. I never knew about her until she came to me that day. For some reason, I always believed you had a good woman."
Victor frowned off at the shell of the retreat.
Why didn't you ever mention her?
Richard shrugged.
I hope you don't think me a terrible person, Richard, but she just doesn't fit my idea of the woman I thought would be with you.
I don't think you're a terrible person, Victor. Everybody should have the right to think for themselves.
Do you mind if I ask you about her?
Richard sighed. Victor, I'm tired. I'd really rather not talk about my wife. Besides, there's nothing to say. She's my wife. What is, is. Victor grunted as he chewed a big bite of red onion. After he swallowed, he waved the half of onion he had left.
It's not good for a man to carve such things in the day, and then at night have to go home to... What am I saying? What has got into me? Forgive me, Richard. Nikki is a beautiful woman.
Yes, I suppose so.
And she cares for you.
Richard didn't say anything.
Ishak and I tried to get you out of that place by bargaining for you with your gold. It wasn't enough. The man was a pompous official. Nikki knew how to wiggle-worm him. She used her words to turn the key on your prison door. Without Nikki, you would be buried in the sky.
So she told them that I could carve to save my life?
That's right. It is she who got you the job of carver.
Victor waited for more and finally sighed in resignation when it wasn't forthcoming.
How are those chisels I sent down?
Good. They work well. I could use a clawed chisel with finer teeth, though. Victor handed Richard another small slice of lardo.
You will have it.
What about the steel? Victor waved his onion.
Not to worry. Ishak is doing well in your place. Not as good as you, but he is doing well. He gets me what I need. Everyone likes Ishak and is happy he decided to fill in the need. The Order is so desperate for progress to continue that they turn a blind eye to his work. Favel, the charcoal maker, asked about you. He likes Ishak, but misses you.
Richard smiled at the memory of the nervous fellow. I'm glad Ishak is buying his charcoal. There were a lot of good people in the old world. Richard had always envisioned them as the enemy, and now he was friends with a number of them. It had happened to him so often, and in the same way. People were basically the same everywhere, once you got to know them. There were those who loved liberty, who cried out to live their own lives, to strive, to rise above, to achieve, and those bent on the mindless equality of stagnation, brought about through the enforcement of an artificial, arbitrary gray uniformity, those who wanted to transcend through their own effort, and those who wanted others to think for them and were willing to pay the ultimate price for it. Camille and Nobby both stood and grinned when Richard climbed the steps.
Nobby and I worked on our carving, Richard. Will you come and see?
Richard smiled and put an arm around Camille's shoulders.
Sure. Let's see what you've done today.
Richard followed them down the clean hallway and out to the back where Camille and Nobby had carved faces in an old log. The carvings were terrible.
Well, Camille, it looks pretty good. Yours too, Nobby.
The carvings of the faces wore smiles, and to Richard, that alone was priceless. Despite how poorly done, they had more life to them than what Richard saw executed day in and day out in precious marble by master carvers.
Really, Richard? Nobby asked. You think Camille and I could be carvers?
Someday, maybe. You need more practice. You still have much to learn, but all carvers have to practice to become adept. Here. Look at this, right here, for example. What do you think of this? What's wrong with it? Camille folded his arms as he frowned in concentration at the face he'd carved.
I don't know.
Nobby? Ill at ease, Nobby shrugged.
It doesn't look like a real face, but I can't tell why.
Look at my face, at my eyes. What's different?
Well, I think your eyes are a different shape, Camille said.
And they are closer together, not out at the side of the head, Nobby added.
Very good.
Richard smoothed some of the dirt where the carrots had been pulled up then molded the moist dirt into a mound, he used his finger and thumb to shape a simple face. "See here? By putting the eyes closer like this, it looks more like a real person." Both young men nodded as they studied what he had done.
"I see," Camille nodded. "I'll start a new one and do it better."
Richard clapped him on the back. "Good man."
"Maybe one day we can be carvers too," Nobby said.
"Maybe," was all Richard said. Nicky had dinner on the table waiting for him. A bowl of soup sat next to the glowing lamp. The rest of the room was left to the evening gloom. Nicky, too, sat at the table waiting.
"How is the carving today?"
she asked as Richard went to the basin to wash the dirt from his hands. He splashed the soapy water on his face, rinsing off the stone dust. "Carving is carving." Nicky rubbed her thumb on the base of the lamp.
"Are you able to stand it?"
Richard wiped his hands. "What choice have I? I can either stand it or I can end it all. What choice is that? Are you asking me if I am ready to commit suicide yet?" She looked up.
"That isn't what I meant."
He tossed the towel down beside the basin. "Besides, how can I not be grateful for a job you got for me?" Nicky's blue eyes turned back to the table.
"Victor told you."
"It wasn't all that hard to figure out. Victor said only that you were beautiful and you saved my life."
"I had no choice, Richard. They would only release you if you had a skill. I had to tell them."
More than most days, he felt the essence of the engagement with her, the dance. She felt secure behind her shield of "had to tell them," yet it allowed her to watch him, to see how he would react. All the effort of the day, moving heavy stone blocks, lifting the hammer countless times, had sapped his strength. His hands tingled with the effect of all those ringing blows. Now he had begun yet again the battle with Nicky. He sat down on his pallet as exhaustion took him. Fatigue was part of any battle. As much as he ever felt it when he held the blade, he felt it now, that life-or-death dance. This was no less a battle than any Richard had ever fought. Nicky stood in opposition to freedom, to life. This was a dance with death. The dance with death was really the definition of life itself, since all people eventually must die.
"I want to know something, Nicky."
She gazed expectantly at him.
"What is it?"
"Can you tell if Kaylin is alive?"
"Of course. I can feel the link to her at all times."
"And is she still alive, then?" Nicky smiled in that assuring manner of hers.
"Richard, Kaylin is fine. Don't let that weigh on your mind."
Richard stared at Nicky for a time. Finally, he withdrew his gaze and laid down in his prison bed. He rolled away from Nicky's gaze, from the dance.
"Richard, I made you soup. Come eat."
"I'm not hungry." He shut her from his mind and tried to remember Kaylin's green eyes as weariness engulfed him. Chapter 58 Richard could feel Neil's breath on the back of his neck. The young disciple watched over Richard's shoulder as he tap-tap-tapped the back of the chisel, carving the gaping mouth of a sinner crying out in agony as his body was being torn apart by the keeper of the underworld.
"Quite good," Neil murmured, overcome with delight in what he was seeing.
Richard rested the wrist of his chisel hand against the stone to help push himself upright.
"Thank you, Brother Neil."
Neil's brown eyes, the same color as his drab robes, stared with arrogant challenge. Richard did nothing to meet that challenge.
"You know, Richard, I don't like you."
"No man is worth liking, Brother Neil."
"You always have an answer, don't you, Richard?" The young wizard smiled then, as he reached under his hood and scratched his closely cropped brown hair.
"Do you know why you have this job?" "Because the Order gave me a chance to help."
"No, no," Neil interrupted as he suddenly grew impatient.
"I mean, do you know why the position was open? Do you know why we needed carvers, enabling you to gain this great opportunity at employment?"
Richard knew very well why they had needed carvers.
"No, Brother Neil, I was a laborer at the time. Many of them were put to death."
"Then they must have been traitors to our cause. I'm happy the Order caught them." Neil's sly smile returned as he shrugged.
"Maybe. I could tell that they had a bad attitude. They thought too much of themselves,
of what they selfishly consider their talent. A very old-fashioned notion, don't you think, Richard? I wouldn't know, Brother Neil. I only know I am able to carve, and I am grateful for the opportunity to do my duty, to help my fellow man by contributing my efforts. Neil backed away, giving Richard an appraising look, as if to measure whether or not the words had been mocking. Richard hadn't given Neil the opening he wanted, so Neil simply spilled out his point. I thought some among them might be deriding the order with their work. I thought they might be using their carving to mock and ridicule our noble cause. Really, Brother Neil, I never suspected. That is why you are nobody, and never will be anybody. You are a nothing, just like all those carvers. I realize I am nobody important, Brother Neil. It would be wrong to think I was of any value other than in what I can contribute. I aspire only to work hard in service to the Creator, so I might earn my reward in the next life. The smile was gone, replaced by a fiery scowl. I ordered them put to death, after I had confessions tortured out of each one of them. Richard's fist tightened on the chisel. Through a calm expression, he contemplated driving his chisel through Neil's skull. He knew he could do it before the man could react. But what would it gain? Nothing. I am grateful, Brother Neil, that you uncovered the traitors in our midst. Neil squinted in suspicion for a moment. He finally dismissed it with a twist of his mouth before suddenly swirling amid a flourish of his robes. Come with me, the brother commanded in a grave tone as he marched away. Richard followed him across the field, churned to mud by all the workers going back and forth, by all the supplies being dragged, carried, or rolled to the construction site. They strode past what seemed the endless face of a palace. The stone walls were getting even higher, with row upon row of window openings. Their trim was beginning to take form. Many of the beams for the second floor had been placed in sockets in the walls. A maze of inner walls was going up too, defining the interior rooms and hallways. There would be miles of corridors in the palace. Dozens of stairwells stood in various stages of construction. It wouldn't be long before oak floors were laid over some of the rooms below, enclosing them. The roof had to be completed over those sections first, though, lest rain ruin the flooring. Some of the outer rooms were to have roofs lower than the main section, which was to rise up to a towering height. Richard expected to see those lower rooms capped with slate and lead roofs before the winter rains. He stayed close behind Brother Neil as they marched toward the main opening into the palace. There the walls were higher and more complete, with many of the ornate decorations in place. Neil charged two at a time up the semicircle of marble steps leading up to the entry plaza. The white marble pillars stood in an impressive sweep, and over the top of them many of the stone carvings had been installed. With all the tortured people frozen in stone, it was an intimidating sight, as it was meant to be. The floor of the plaza was gray-veined white cavatura marble. The sun on the marble made the plaza, half-encircled by the soaring columns, glow with glorious light. The decrepit people in the stone ringing the plaza seemed to be screaming in pain at that light, which was just the effect Brother Narev had wanted. Neil made a sweeping gesture with an arm. Here will be the great statue, the statue to crown the entry to the Emperor's retreat. He turned a complete revolution while holding the arm aloft. This will be the place where people enter the great palace. This is where people will come while on their way to see the officials of the order. This is where they will come closer to the Creator. Richard said nothing. Neil watched him for a moment, then stood in the center and threw his arms up toward the sunlight. Here will be the statue to the glory of the Creator, using his light in a sundial. The light will reveal the loathsome creatures of the statues, mankind. This will be a monument to man's evil nature, doomed to the misery of his existence in this world, wicked of character, cowering in humiliation, as his light reveals man's hateful body and soul for what it is, perverted beyond hope. Richard thought that if madness had a champion, it was the Order and people who thought like them. Neil's arm swept back down, a conductor concluding a triumphant performance. You, Richard Cipher, are to carve this statue. Richard was acutely aware of the hammer in his straining fist. Yes, Brother Neil.
Neil waggled a finger held close to his nose as he grinned with fiendish delight.
I don't think you understand, Richard.
He thrust up a commanding hand.
Wait. Wait right there.
He strode off, his brown robe swirling behind like muddy waters in a flood. Neil collected something from behind the marble pillars and returned, holding it in one hand. It was a small statue. He set it down where the radiating lines of the marble floor converged at a point in the middle of the plaza. It was a plaster statue of what Brother Neil had just revealed to Richard. If anything, it was even more gruesome than Neil had described it. Richard ached to smash it with his hammer, right on the spot. It would almost be worth dying to destroy such a vile thing. Almost.
This is it, Neil said. Brother Narev had a master carver do up the model of the sundial to his instructions. Brother Narev's vision is truly remarkable. It's perfect, don't you think?
It is just as horrifying as you said it was, Brother Neil.
And you are to carve it. Just scale this model up into a great statue in white marble.
Feeling numb, Richard nodded.
Yes, Brother Neil.
The finger waggled again with great delight.
No, no, you don't yet really understand, Richard.
He was grinning like a washwoman standing at a fence with a basket full of dirty gossip.
You see, I did some checking on you. Brother Narev and I never trusted you, Richard Cipher. No, we never did. Now we know all about you. I found out your secret.
Richard's flesh went cold. His muscles tightened as hard as stone. He prepared to throw himself into battle. There appeared to be no choice but to fight, now. Neil was about to die.
You see, I talked to People's Protector Muxin.
Richard was taken aback.
Who?
Neil displayed a triumphant grin.
The man who sentenced you to work as a carver, he knew your name. He showed me the disposition of the case. You confessed to a civil infraction.
He showed me the fine.
22 gold marks, quite a sum.
Neil waggled the finger again.
That was a miscarriage of justice, Richard, and you know it. No man can get a fortune like that through a mere civil infraction. Such a gain can only be ill-gotten.
Richard relaxed a bit. His fingers ached from how hard he had been gripping the hammer.
No, Neil said. You had to have done something much more serious to have collected a fortune of 22 gold marks. You are obviously guilty of a very serious crime.
Neil spread his hands like the creator before one of his children.
I am going to show you mercy, Richard.
Does Brother Narev approve of your showing mercy?
Oh, yes. You see, the statue is to be your penance to the order, your way to atone for your evil deed. You will create this statue when you are not doing your other carving for the palace. You will receive no pay for it. You are commanded not to steal any marble from that which the order has purchased for the emperor's retreat, but to procure the marble with your own money. If you have to work for a decade to earn such a sum, all the better.
You mean I am to carve here, in the day, at my job, and I am to carve this statue for you on my own time, at night?
Your own time? What a corrupt concept.
When am I to sleep?
Sleep is not the concern of the order. Justice is.
Richard took a calming breath. He pointed with his hammer at the thing on the ground.
And this is what I am to carve? That's right. The stone will be purchased by you, and your labor will be contributed by you to the benefit of your fellow man. It will be your gift to the people of the order in penance for your evil deeds. Men like you, with the ability, must happily contribute their all to help the order.
Brother Neil swept his arm out.
There is to be a dedication of the palace this winter. The people need to see tangible evidence that the order can bring such a great project as this magnificent palace to reality. They desperately need the lessons this palace will teach them. Brother Narev is eager to dedicate the palace. He wishes to hold a great ceremony this winter, which will be attended by many dignitaries of the order. The war is progressing. The people need to see that their palace is too. They need to see results for their sacrifices. You, Richard Cipher, are to carve the great statue for the entrance to the Emperor's retreat.
I am honored, Brother Neil.
Neil smirked.
You should be.
What if I'm not up to the task?
Neil's smirk widened into a grin.
Then you will go back into custody, and Protector Muxin's questioners will have you until you confess. After you finally confess, you will be hung on a pole. The birds will feast on your flesh.
Brother Neil pointed down at the grotesque model.
Pick it up. This is what you shall devote your life to.
Nikki looked up when she heard Richard's voice. He was talking to Camille and Nabi. She heard him say that he was tired and couldn't look at their carving, that he would look tomorrow. Nikki knew they would be disappointed. That was unlike Richard. She spooned buckwheat mush and peas from a dented pot into a bowl. She placed the bowl and a wooden spoon on the table. There was no bread. She wished she could make something better for him, but after their voluntary contributions were taken out, they had no money. If not for the garden the women of the building had taken to planting in the back of the house, they would be in desperate straits. Nikki had learned how to grow things so she could have food for him. His shoulders were stooped, his eyes distant. He was carrying something in one hand.
I have your dinner. Come and eat.
Richard set the thing on the table beside the oil lamp. It was a small, intricately carved statue of figures cowering in terror. They were partially surrounded by a section of a ring. A tall lightning bolt, a common symbol of retribution by the Creator, came down in the center, piercing a number of obviously evil men and women, pinning them to the ground. It was a staggering representation of the evil nature of mankind and the Creator's anger at their wanton ways.
"What's this?" she asked.
Richard slumped down into a chair. His face sank into his hands, his fingers stabbed back into his hair. After a time he looked up.
"What you wanted?" he said quietly.
"What I wanted? My punishment."
"Punishment?"
Richard nodded. "Brother Narrow found out about the fine of 22 gold marks. He said I must have done something criminal to get that much money, and he sentenced me to make a statue for the grand entrance to the Emperor's palace." Nikki glanced down at the small thing in the table.
"What is it?"
"A sundial. This is the ring with the times etched on it. The lightning bolt casts a shadow of the Creator's light on the ring to tell the time of day."
"I still don't understand. Why is it a sentence? You are a carver. That is your job."
Richard shook his head. "I am to buy the stone out of my own money, and I am to carve this at night, on my own time, as my gift to the Order."
"And why do you see this as what I wanted?"
Richard ran a finger down the lightning bolt, his eyes studying the statue. "You brought me here, to the old world, because you wanted me to learn the errors of my ways. I have. I should have confessed to a crime and let them end it." Without thinking, Nikki reached across the table and put her hand over his.
"No, Richard, that's not what I wanted."
He pulled his hand away. Nikki pushed his bowl closer to him.
"Eat, Richard. You need your strength."
Without complaint, he did as she told him. A prisoner doing as ordered. She hated to see him like this. The spark was gone from his eyes just as it had left her father's eyes. When he looked at the statue sitting in the center of their table, his eyes were dead. It was as if the life, the energy, the hope was gone from him. When he was finished with his meal, he went without a word to his bed and lay down, facing away from her. Nikki sat at the table, listening to the sputter of the lamp's flame, watching Richard's even breathing as he went to sleep. It seemed his spirit was crushed. She had believed for so long that she would learn something valuable when he was pushed to such extremes. It appeared she had been wrong, that he had finally given up. She could learn nothing from him now. There was little left for her to do, little reason to continue the whole thing. For a moment she felt the crushing weight of her disappointment. Then even that was gone. Empty and unfeeling, Nikki collected the bowl and spoon and carried them to the wash bucket. She worked quietly to let him sleep, as she resigned herself to returning to Jagang. It wasn't Richard's fault he could teach her nothing. There was nothing more to life to learn. This was all there was. Her mother had been right. Nicky took out the butcher knife and set it quietly on the table. Richard had suffered enough. It would be for the best.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.